accession number 18560, reel 5.
We're giving the Gordons support by fire. The Gordons, of course, didn't know this, didn't ask us to give them support. We just gave them it automatically, as we usually do it when we found your mates in a sticky position. But then we do leave the ship, because the disembark the majority of the infantry companies. When we approach the gangplanks going down into the sea, the old matlows are stood there. There's two matlows stood on the beach with a taut rope. There's the men were going down saying, "Grab hold of the rope, you're all right with one hand, and wade ashore." And they were going. They got halfway down and they were going on all this steel helmet going through the We didn't realise this, but as the ship got lighter, it was wafting out away from the coast, you see. And Buck Brown and I were going down, and the old matlow there says, "You're all right, you're no trouble at all. You walk straight down there and keep on walking until he got on the beach." Buck was behind me. I had a brain gun over my shoulder, a big magazine with a satchel full of magazines. When I jumped off, I thought I was stepping off the ramp. I had no footage. I just went down with the weight. Down I went. And oh hell. So I let go of the brain gun. I thought, well, I know where that is. I can swim back when I get my stuff off if I get on the shore. And I got the magazine satchel off the shore, and I took my equipment off, went back in. I managed to receive the brain gun and the magazines, along with Buck Brown. And then we got there. We had to wait for the carriers, because we were infantry then. Once we'd landed, we took up position as infantrymen until the carriers landed from the transport ships. Anyway, we just in groups, scattered round about, but all together as a group. And the colonel and other units that had been assembled in order were advancing slightly inland to clear the beaches and ensure that we had a good landing area protected. Well, word came from the anti-tank platoon that Captain Myers had captured a Beaufort gun. Over on a Beaufort position, manned by the Italians, or had been abandoned by the Italians. Well, being an anti-tank gunner, he knew something about heavy guns. He decided to experiment with it. With Captain Myers. The next thing we knew, a bloody aircraft had been hit. And it was one of ours. So word went round. Nobody saw what happened. Nobody saw what happened at all. We kept quiet. Nobody mentioned it at all. Eventually, the day wore on, the carriers arrived, and the infantry battalion moved forward, but we found we couldn't move. The carriers were on soft sand. They got bellied down. So most of our day, our time on the beach was settled on trying to retrieve the carriers, which we did. We formed up, went inland, behind the infantry, and things weren't too bad, and we advanced towards the first town we encountered. The first town we came across was Noto, up in the hills. The Americans were there, the American aircraft were there, not the American airborne had captured it. In the chaos that happened, that we found out then, and only then did we find out what happened with the remainder of the invasion fleet. The airborne had gone over in the aircraft, and things were at a loss as regards the positions. And the Americans had dropped on Noto, had dropped on the town itself, and of course on the surrounding country, but not so many on the surrounding country. The majority were dropped on Noto. We went into Noto, we're at the top there, on the top of this mountain. Very narrow streets there were. We're on the main highway, but it was just like a narrow street. Barely the width. It was wider than the width of a carrier, but not for two vehicles couldn't pass in that road. Anyway, we stood there for a minute or two, taking a breather. Things seemed a bit quiet. We had aircraft approaching from the rear, from where the beaches were behind us. We took no notice. We thought, well, they're bound to be our aircraft in these. And there were two bloody Messerschmitts flying at the same level as we were, just in line with the houses. So it's a cramped place and a cramped street, without now, bugger this. Don't open up on these buggers, let them bugger off. They haven't seen us, they can't have seen us. You could see the men in the craft. I said, just sit there, travelling nice and steady. Let them bugger off, let them get off. Because if we had a fire on them and missed, we'd have turned round, of course, and come swooping in, an absolutely good target. All in the highway, all in the street, we wouldn't have stood a chance. From there then we went to Francoponti, Vicini, fighting all the way. The majority with no transport at that time. The men at the march, we were marching as well, the carriers were marching as well at that time. When we left Noto, got away from the build-up areas, we were waiting for the transport to land and catch us up. Well, we had an officer with us, I forget his name now. He hadn't been with us very long. He was a good chap. He came from the Midlands, I believe. And we were just slugging away there, left, right, left, right. And we came across a big Fiat omnibus, a big bus parked there. Now, what the hell's wrong with that? Looks all right. Anyway, we had a look. We could get no ignition at all. We found no ignition starter. Anyway, there's an old chap there. He spoke in American accent and Italian or Sicilian. He said, "You won't start that by turning key." He says, "You have to start with a small engine." He said, the engine is so big, it has to have an auxiliary engine to start it. I said, we don't know what it is then. So I said, do you understand? He said, I understand. Please, let me come in cab. So he got in the cab, and the small auxiliary engine, little turn, and he started it up. He let it get a few revs up and fairly warm. Then he puts the switch over and he started the main engine. So we got as many in it as we could and carried on driving that to a place called Francofonte. And there we stopped for a while and Willie Gordon, the CKMSM headquarter company, he was rattling around the railway station, a small railway station. In the goods yard there, he found a load, a train loaded with flour. So we thought, well, get on the good side of the civilians around about. And we started issuing them with flour. And they were very pleased because they'd had no bread, no nothing for weeks. He gave all the bloody flour away. We had none left. But the cooks had made some things. They had took a little to enhance our meals. But that was it. That's all we got out of it. But the Italians were pretty delighted. The Sicilians were very delighted.
So now you found out.
The next place was Sferro. Sferro. On the Sferro, Seveto River. It was a dried up riverbed. But the Sferro Hills were just beyond it. With this wide riverbed to cross to attack Sferro. And I was detailed along with Lieutenant Ian McCarty, who was our platoon commander at the time, to reconnoitre the river and see if we could find a passage home for the soft-skinned vehicles, the transport. We had to carry with us a roll of white tape from where we set off, starting point, and then unroll this tape. We had spares with us if we ran out of it. And we laid it with us as we went on. We found a crossing across the river, marked it on both sides with one tape that we'd put behind a single tape, and then when we found the river crossing we extended two sides, you see, and the vehicle had to go in across it in between the two tapes. We were at the other side, laid down, two or three of us, when to our surprise and away on our right we saw a patrol approaching. It was a moonlight night. The further we got down, we had laid our head on the ground and sideways, you could see them silhouetted against the sky, and of course got their helmets on. I thought, oh hell, if they find this tape, they don't know what's going to happen. So, big chap, I think it was a chap called Richardson, so I said, I'll stay. Mr. McCarty, will you pull them back across the river and we'll stay here and watch this patrol? We'll keep them away from the tape. Anyway, they went on the way. We never saw no more of the patrol. And we came back, joined the battalion. And then the advance started to across the river to attack Sferro. At Sferro, oh, that was a right battle. We were on the plane and the hills confronting us. I forget the name of the companies, where they were, whether it was C, D, A or B, that were in advance, because we were the carriers, we were behind, coming, following up. The carriers couldn't be used at all due to the ground being very rough and soft. So we just had to toddle on behind the battalion. And he had this hill there. Good Lord, it was well defended. But the companies went up and through. They went through him, actually burst through him, but they were cut off. As they cut through his FDLs, and then...
FDLs?
Forward defended the Calipers. I think it was D Company, I'm not quite certain. Commanded by Captain Scott, a Londoner. He was a good company commander, by God, one of the best. He'd gone through right from Alamein, where he'd been with the battalion since it formed. But along with his company, it were captured. He was severely wounded, placed on a stretcher, and carried on top of a German three-quarter track vehicle that was propelled on its tracks but steered by its just two front wheels. A big, heavy armoured car. And he was placed on the top in the stretcher, and away they went back. And they came under a heavy shell fire from our guns. But that was a severe loss. We lost quite a lot of men down at the top of Sweeney Hills. But it petered out, and we'd consolidated what we'd gained. And we had one or two vehicles at the top of the hill that they couldn't move. But they left for us to mess about with. But we weren't supposed to use them at all. You could capture them, but you couldn't use them. If they were any good, a vehicle was any good, or whatever you captured was in good condition, you'd hand it over to the ordnance. You see? You couldn't use them. We did do, but of course, by law, we couldn't. Anyway, the battle was finished. And we were just messing about there, round about, until we got settled down. And we moved the carriers up. Came under shell fire again. Enemy shell fire dropping on right where the carriers moved. Just at the base of this hill. And Sergeant Wilson, Tug Wilson, another Tug Wilson, he was in a slit house that he'd been digging. Only got about 9 inches deep. And he slid on his stomach. And the shell fire had down on us. The carriers had to be moved. One carrier ran straight over his slit trench, right across his body. And the only trouble he had was his breathing, his chest breathing. Because he had his small pack on, you see, the weight of the carrier. But fortunately, the ground was soft as well. No broken ribs. I don't think so. But he complained of his breathing. Anyway, he was sent away to hospital. Then another place we advanced to Jabini Aerodrome, which was the German Army, 6th German Army headquarters in Sicily.
Which aerodrome?
Jabini. G-E-R-B-I-N-E. Jabini. Our brigade was destined to attack it, the airfield. He was still using it. We advanced up the road to it. I think the first Black Watch, yes, it was the first Black Watch first. They were advanced, leading. We all marched up the road, followed by the 7th Argyles, followed by us, the 7th Battalion. They marched up the road to a point whereby to swing the point of advance to the left and advance over the airfield, or towards the airfield and over. And the Argyles still with them. We then advanced and went carried straight on up the road and stopped at a place called, as we termed the name of it, the malaria station. It was a building on the left of the road and on the perimeter of the airfield. The main road itself, I do believe, finished up in Catania. However, it was on the took a position round about the malaria station. The platoons were in the position by the CO, in the defensive position around the CO, by the CO. And we went onto the airfield, right on the perimeter. And we were based in the bomb dump. The carriers in the bomb dump. The 500... I don't know what bloody way in the world, the big ones laid out. All they needed was priming. We thought, hell, I hope we don't start shelling it. So we were right in amongst them. That corporal I was trying to remember, Corporal Lawton, joined us at Enfeeblemill.
Not Walker.
No, it wasn't Walker, it was Lawton. Corporal Lawton. We took up positions there and that was it. Our main job was to stay there, contain the airfield, and give assistance to the 1st and the 7th Argyles, 1st Black Watch, 7th Argyles. Our main role at that point was patrolling, finding out what information we could of the enemy on the airfield and its surroundings. Captain Captain Willie Rudd, who was our captain at the time, were detailed to take me and a section on patrol at night. I forget what date it was, it makes no difference. It was that night, as soon as dark fell, with the set off. Because on this section we were patrolling, we were open to attack on the flank. We set off. We posted the section out in order, and then the getaway man at the rear. He was a chap we used to take who was not the tip top soldier, but a chap who in a situation like that was liable to panic. You see, so you put him in the rear, and if anything did happen, he was a getaway man to inform us that we'd come in contact with the enemy on the fire. That was his chance to get away, you see, if he was on this, you couldn't rely on him. We went a little further forward and we couldn't hear nothing at all. Anyway, I was speaking to Captain Rudd. He's laid in the ditch, the side of this cart truck. I said, are we going to go further forward? I said, or not? He says, no, I think we've gone far enough to know anything about. Well, I don't agree with you, sir. I says, the position of battalions in there, I says, oh, to attack on the flank. I said, we better go forward until we find out where they are and what they're doing. We will find out if there's only a few of them. We found out where they are and we're doing a job. He said, well, you go on a bit further. And I'll say, wait for you coming back. So I said to Richards, and I said, right, Richards, come with me. So he gets behind me. I said, we're going to lay to the opposite side of the track and we'll crawl. So we started crawling. We'd done, a good few hundred yards, maybe 400 or 500 yards. When we saw on our right, slightly forward, quarter right, lights being lit, and then followed by cigarettes being smoked. You could see the red glow. Then we heard them talking. Picks and shovels being used. A little while later, we laid there for listening to them and trying to define where exactly how far they were away. But the only indication was that the cigarette ends. It gives a distance to approximate. And just in the far distance, then we heard a rumbling of tanks and engines starting. Then they moved and then stopped. So we're crawling. I said, come on, we'll crawl a bit further. There's a building up there, look you. You can just see the silhouette of this building. So we're crawling up. We started moving as we're crawling. He was touching my feet, you see, being behind. Every time I would him up forward, his hand and touch me. So I said, come up. We had the signals, come up. I said, hey. Now they're both still. I says, can you hear movement on the side of this hedge? He says, not now. Well, I said, look, we'll move. I said, and then listen. Moved a bit, and it was there. And I says, there's someone doing the same as we're doing, crawling up. I says, we've come over a bloody gap, I says, we'll be pounced on. And we thought it was the enemy. You see, his other side, this cactus hedge room. Anyway, it came more or less in line with the house. Well, it was an angle from us. And there's a gateway there, or had been a gate. The gap was there. And we laid still. And the next minute, we couldn't laugh. They laughed like hell after. It was a bloody old salvo. It wasn't gunting, otherwise it would have given us an idea. But every time we moved, it seemed to move. I said, I think we've gone far enough. We'll go back. So we made our way back.
Where was this?
In Sicily.
Yes, but whereabouts in Sicily?
Between Sferro and Giabini. It was on Giabini Aerodrome. Anyway, on our way back, looking for Captain Rudd, but I couldn't find him. Anyway, we couldn't shout. We were whispering, Captain Rudd, Captain Rudd. Hey, bugger, I'll give it up as a bad job. So we come back to the command post in the malaria station. And Captain Rudd was inside with a section. And the first man I spoke to was Captain Lieutenant McCarty. So I said, Mac, I said, well, what's bloody Rudd doing in there? He says, he's given the results of what they found out. I said, what is it? Have you heard? He says, no, he says, the adjutant's there, and the intelligence officer, Peter Watson, he says, and the colonel. He says, no enemy at all, they've got some.